Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is a professional storyteller and teaches at Florida Atlantic University. Hi, Karen.
How are you, Michael?
What story did you bring today?
Here's one from Jim Grappando, who is going to be presenting at the Miami International Book Fair.
So if you go back to 1988 or so, I was a young lawyer in Miami's largest and probably most prestigious law firm, working downtown in the new Southeast Financial Center, which was 55 stories high, and I had a 42nd floor corner office looking out on the bay. But I had a dream to be a writer. And so I spent 4 years, nights and weekends, writing a novel. In 1992, I did the most scary thing for any writer, and that is you put your work out on the street. So I got an agent, and he tried all summer long to sell my book. And anyone who has lived in South Florida for a long time will remember that in August of 92, we had a visitor, and his name was Andrew. And Andrew ripped through South Florida. And my fiance, who lived down by the falls, her house was destroyed. Her grandmother's house was destroyed. Her parents' house was destroyed. They were all living with me in a two-bedroom townhome near Coral Gables with no air conditioning, no electricity. And that was right about the time I got the letter from my agent in New York, Artie Pine, who said, "I've knocked on every door in New York City, and I'm sorry to tell you, Jim, but nobody wants your book." So I crumpled up the letter, threw it in the 8-foot-high pile of hurricane debris that was outside my front door, and thought, okay, you know, I gave it a shot. I will be a lawyer. The dream is over. So Artie calls me back when electricity is restored and tells me, "You know, Jim, I've been thinking about this. You got the most encouraging rejection letters I have ever seen." And I thought at the time, you know, Artie must have invented the word spin, but he did have a point. And I had spent 4 years incorporating every conversation I heard at a cocktail party or bar reception and putting it into a 250,000-word monster in a box. And it was just too big. And so he told me, "Start over, chapter one, page one, and I think you'll have a different result." Now, he was a very positive guy, but I was afraid to really go down the wrong road again. I didn't want to spend 4 years writing something that would not get published. So I was living in my townhouse, right on the fringe of Coral Gables, and I was in my routine again, getting up at 6 in the morning, driving to work downtown Miami, staying till about 8 at night, and coming home and writing. Now, at that time, Miami Vice was the hottest show on TV, so Miami was cool, and publishers were actually looking for stories about Miami. But for the first time in my life, the only time I can say, I truly had writer's block. I could not get the first word down on the page. In about October of 92, it was about midnight. I was staring at the blank computer screen again, and I decided, I'll just go for a walk, clear my head before bed. And so I did. You know, I walk around my neighborhood beneath the beautiful banyan trees and so forth, and thinking and thinking. Nothing came to me. I got about 3 blocks from my house, and a police car pulls up in the grassy part of the swale. I stop on the sidewalk. Cop jumps out, and he demands to know, "Where are you going?" And I'm thinking, you know, as a young lawyer, I'm thinking, you know, this is America. We have our rights. You can't just be confronted on the street. But, you know, I had to be at work early in the morning, so I was very polite and very honest. And I told him, "Well, I live around here. I'm just out for a walk." And then he asked me for identification. I guess he wanted to see if I actually did live around there. And again, rather than get up on my soapbox about my constitutional rights, I just told him the truth, which was, I'm sorry, I don't have my wallet. And I didn't. I was pretty much ready for bed. And he looks at me and says, well, wait right there. There's been a report of a peeping Tom in the neighborhood, and I need to check this out. So I'm thinking, oh, great. Got to be at the office. It's almost 1 o'clock in the morning at this point. So I've got to listen as he calls into the radio dispatcher to check out this peeping Tom. And I'm listening close enough to hear the dispatcher say, we're looking for a white male, under 6 feet tall, brown hair, brown eyes, mid-30s. Mind you, this is some 25 years ago, so it's fitting pretty close to who I am, wearing a white T-shirt. I was wearing a white T-shirt, blue shorts. I had on blue shorts, and I'm thinking, I'm going to jail. And finally, she adds, and a mustache. I've never had a mustache in my life. But the cop looks at me. Finally, he just says, go home. And I breathe a sigh of relief. And I'm thinking, but for a mustache, I'd be in the back of that car. And I'd be on the news. And I would have to call somebody from my office. And I worked for a very prestigious firm. Janet Reno was once a partner at the law firm I worked at. Talbert D'Alembert, who went on to become president of Florida State University, was a partner in that law firm. And I thought to myself, there would also be, along Sandy and Janet, James Grappando, peeping Tom lawyer, because those kind of things stick. So when I got home, I took that feeling of being innocent and being accused and decided I'd write about that and take it to the most dramatic extreme. And so I wrote a scene of a man on death row, hours away from execution. And that scene, as I wrote it that night, all night, became the opening scene of Jack Switek's first novel, The Pardon, which was published 25 years ago this fall. And I've written 28 novels since then, 16 of them with my friend Jack Switek, who I met that night. So I gave up the partnership at Steele, Hector & Davis in about 1998, and my mother, to this day, who's 92 years old now, divides my life into two chapters. One is when Jimmy had a job, and the other is when he went off and did the book thing.
Jim Grappando with the trials of being an author.
I related to the story so much, except for being a published novelist and except for being a lawyer. Boy, did I relate to this story. I just loved it. And I guess I wasn't almost arrested either.
Do you have a lot of rejection notes?
Oh, of course. And they say, that, now I've written, published books, but not a novel. And they say that a rejection notice is a badge of honor. And it's really hard to believe that when you've got a bunch of them.
Well, he had nice rejection notes. Getting a nice one, I guess that's better than getting a mean one.
Well, they don't usually send out mean ones. There's very few rejection letters that say don't give up your day job.
You mean there's not many honest rejection letters?
No, sometimes things aren't accepted because it's not the right time for that book, because there are too many similar to that. There's all kinds of reasons. Actually, it's even more of a compliment for his agent. And by the way, Arthur Pine was a very, I don't know if he's still around, but he was a very, very prestigious.
Being an author, you would know who he is. I have no idea
right.
who Arthur Pine is.
Very prestigious New York agent. And for him, who has seen many rejection letters, to say that this is the nicest I've ever seen really says a lot, because publishers try to be nice. They don't want to discourage you because you may be the next Jacqueline Suzanne or the next Dan
Brown.
Brown, thank you. The next Dan Brown just shows how famous he is in my head. And so they don't want to discourage you, and they certainly don't want to insult you, right? Going back 20 years later and saying, are you kidding? I've still got that nasty rejection letter from you. So to get a nice one, a really nice one, is very nice.
Jim was experiencing a little bit of writer's block, and it took a walk out at night and having an interaction, doesn't sound like a pleasant interaction, with a policeman to get his juices going again.
It's said that you need to write what you know, and he sure knew the feeling of almost being arrested for something he didn't do. Emotion needs to be at the heart of a story. I mean, it's got to be a good story, but somewhere you need that emotion. And stories come from different places, and this story came from his heart, certainly, and from that experience.
Well, it came from his heart, and also he imagined the worst-case scenario, which helped him out.
Exactly. Well, that's what you do when a cop is getting the description that almost exactly matches yours over the radio.
I was impressed with his dedication, being a lawyer and then going home and writing every day. A lot of discipline.
Incredible. And a number of lawyers do that. I remember the late, lovely Barbara Parker, who was a Miami lawyer, who did that herself. She was writing, working all the time. And certainly Scott Turow and a lot of these people, they're brilliant. They're articulate. They've got great stories they work with all day. What is the practice of law but working with stories? I once did a workshop with the Broward Bar Association, helping them see that what they're doing is storytelling and how to do that most effectively.
So the better you are at telling stories, the better you are in court?
Absolutely. Think about it this way. It is the judge's job to get justice, to be fair, to be even-handed. It is the lawyer's job not to find the truth. That's not the lawyer's job. The lawyer is an advocate. It's the lawyer's job to tell the story that puts his or her client in the best light. So your story doesn't mean fake. Story just means here's the frame, here's the way I am going to interpret these events. That's all. I'm always frustrated when people say, well, lawyers aren't out for truth. That's not a lawyer's job. That's a judge's job. A pastor's job or a rabbi's job, perhaps. It's not a lawyer's job. Often, lawyers say they don't want to know. They don't want to know. Don't tell me if you really did it. I may be just going by the movies there. But anyhow, it's very, very clear from his story that Jim is a natural storyteller. I just have one thing I have to bring up. As somebody who has been in the publishing business for many, many years, although, as I say, I never published one of those 8 or 10 novels in my filing cabinet, I really blanched when I heard 250,000-word manuscript. I was always taught, although this was years ago, that a manuscript, typical manuscript, runs between 60 and 90,000 words. So 250,000 words is more than twice a large novel. So I could see that maybe just a little editing might have helped him. But that's just me.
Well, why don't you have published novels, Karen? Do you need more editing as well?
I think I need better stories. I think I'll stick to telling other people's stories. By the way, the book that he's talking about at the book fair, The Girl in the Glass Box, is also a Jack Switek novel.
Well, thanks for bringing that story in, Karen. If our listeners have a South Florida story they would like to share, how can they get in touch with you?
Send me an email to cneile, that's N as in Nancy, E-I-L-E, at fau.edu.
Our website also has contact information as well as archive stories at wlrn.org. Click radio and the public storyteller. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal is a professional storyteller and teaches at Florida Atlantic University. My name is Michael Stock. The public storyteller returns next Sunday.
With my husband and kids in a 3-bedroom house, I work part-time at a barbecue joint down on Highway 9. Then the weekend comes and I sing songs, set by set, 45 minutes long. sell CDs, but mostly I don't. Then I pack up my gear and I drive home. I drive home. I drive home. And I write in the morning at the breakfast table in my bathrobe and slippers in the margins of the junk mail. I write in the morning, then I sing them at the bar where they pay me in beer and put dollars in my tip jar. I write in the morning when no one else is home, then I sing them real loud, but only when I'm all alone. I write like a sailor knowing the ship is going down. This is my flair in the night, hoping one day I might be found. I might be found. And I clock out smelling like French fries, and I buy a weekly paper for the classifieds, 'cause I got bills to pay and mouths to feed. And tell me, what would you do if you were me? 'Cause I read what they write in the magazines about the next big thing on the music scene, and my name's not there. They don't come to my shows, and I try not to care that they don't. They don't. I try not to care that they don't. And what would you do if you were me, a stay-at-home mom on a dead-end street? And what would you do if you were me and all you knew how to do was sing things and daydream? And what would you do if you were me, 'cause the world doesn't need another B-grade CD? And what would you do if you were me? You'd pick up your pen and you'd write your story. I write in the morning at the breakfast table in my bathrobe and slippers in the margins of the junk mail. I write in the morning, then I sing them at the bar where they pay me in beer and put dollars in my tip jar. I write in the morning when no one else is home, then I sing them real loud, but only when I'm all alone. I write like a sailor knowing the ship is going down. This is my flair in the night. This is my flair in the night. Oh, this is my prayer in the night, hoping one day I might be found. I might be found, but if I'm not, I'll keep doing what I'm doing.
Youngerman was raised in a family farm, with the love of the land in the morning and the muscle in his arm. Out on the China Ocean and the island of Taiwan is a story worth telling, and I'll sing it in a song. Family farm is a rock of humanity's anchor. In the 21st century world war between the farmer and the banker, great corporate bullies ride on the money train. Farmer stands to lose, a corporation stands to gain. Younger men saw the danger coming from a dark and angry place, and he thought of all the farmers whose lives would be displaced. And he made calls and he wrote letters, oh, but what good did it do? Corporations never read them, nor the politicians too. Younger men went a-walking one night. The moon was like a lantern, stars were shining bright. There came a voice calling so clearly in his head. Maybe it was the ancestors. This is what it said. When God closes the door, he opens the window. When God closes the door, he opens the window. Younger man, the farmer, he made a paper box, and he folded in the corners, and he weighted it with rocks, with a little black powder and a little bit of rice. Warnings on the label, words of advice. danger, said the paper box in writing bright and bold. Do not buy imported rice, our future can't be sold. Support the local farmers, resist the foreign trade. And he placed them in the cities where his point was sure to be made. And he put them at the banks and down at the railway station. Little paper boxes with their little explanations. In the government buildings, they put the bomb squad on alert. But they were only made of paper, no one ever got hurt. They called him the Rice Bomber, and they made a great campaign. They said he was a terrorist, and they vilified his name. Oh, but in the farming countries, when these matters were discussed, they would tip their hats and smile and say, he's one of us. When God closes the door, he opens the window. When God closes the door, he opens the window. 17 paper rice bombs, 17 times. Every one a statement, though they call them each a crime. And though they scoured through the countryside, they did not have a clue. Young Grumman decided then just what he would do. He went down to the cities to turn himself away. He said, I am the one you're looking for. This is your lucky day. My name is Youngerman, he said, and he took a little bow. I did that for the farmers, like I do this for you now. Well, if you did that for the farmers, that's just what you say. But we have you in our custody, and that's where you're gonna stay. And justice was a stone wall, it never shed a tear. They tried and convicted, and they gave him 7 years. 7 years for 17 little boxes of rice. What kind of mathematics could arrive at such a price? It's the kind of mathematics turns the world upside down, and it's up to us to turn it back around. When God closes the door, he opens the window. When God closes the door, he opens the window. Family farm is still the rock that holds humanity's anchor. In the 21st century world war between the farmer and the banker, one side has the money and the other has the plow. And it's anybody's guess what happens now. I went to visit Youngerman. They had him in Taipei. It was in the detention center. It was on a visiting day. I didn't speak his language, and he didn't speak mine. There was plexiglass between us, and we didn't have much time. He said, you have to hold your vision, and you have to hold on tight. Take pride in your accomplishments, and don't give up the fight. Oh, and when the time was over, and they led him away, he put his fist up in the air, and I can still hear him say, when God closes the door, he opens the window. When God closes the door, he opens the window. When God closes the door, he opens the window. When God closes the door, he opens the window.
La Boutine Souriante from their 2011 release, L'Appellation de la Contrôle. I apologize for my French. The tune La Ballade from La Boutine Souriante. Before that, we listened to Jim Page, Ghost Bikes, the CD from Jim from 2010, The True Story of Yangru Men from Ghost Bikes. And opening up that set, Hope Dunbar, Three Black Crows, and She Wrote, I Write. Here's music from England, Fairport Convention, a band that's still around, been playing since the mid-60s. Here's John Gordy.
John Gowdy was a fine young man in Shetland, so it's told. Men is the crown in the hobbit town, his fiddle and he did hold. They've danced it up and they've danced it down as he fiddled the tunes around. Of all the players in Shetland Isles, no better could be found. When John broke the prison door, jailer hadn't seen his like before. He ran back to the Levenwick shore and wrote himself a tune. John had his eye on a fair young girl that lived not far away. His were not the only eyes, so the rumours say. It happened down the Sandwick mines, you in the Carver bed. His rival dropped a hammer down, which struck John on the head. When John broke the prison door, the jailer hadn't seen his like before. He ran back to the Levenwick shore and wrote himself a tune. It struck him such a fearful blow, weakening his mind. Left him with his fiddling still, but the job he couldn't find. For now he was prone to a fearful rage, like the heat of the blazing sun. He would warn friends nearby, the finder coming on. Thank you.
Like a nail out of Bantry Bay, and a union of creed, well, it came undone. This is no sad song, a song for you. But it'll ring out bold, it'll ring out true. Come the morning, we'll rise again. Break the chains from the plough and stars. Break the chains from the plough and stars. Break the chains from the plough and stars. Seeds of souls on fallow ground, while food aplenty did surround. Those mounds of grain grew even higher, those empty bellies, they fueled the fire. Pawning all we had to quell those hungry screams during 6 months, sad in the lockout of 13. Let us arise, came a larkin's call. Let the poor man rise, let the rich man fall. This is no sad song, a song for you. But it'll ring out bold, it'll ring out true. Come the morning, we'll rise again. Break the chains from the plough and stars. Break the chains from the plough and stars. Break the chains from the plough and stars. Bodies cast waif like from a dirty cell. No skylark song will we hear tonight, just the cries and the anguish of the people's plight. This is no sad song, a song for you. But it'll ring out bold, it'll ring out true. And come the morning, we'll rise again. Break the chains from the plough and stars. 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 Break the chains from the plough and stars.
Plough and Stars, that's the Jeremiahs from their latest, The Femme Fatale of Maine. Before the Jeremiahs, we listened to Ladysmith Black Mambazo. Might have recognized that band from South Africa. This is their 2006 release called Long Walk to Freedom, where they do a lot of duo partnerships. We listened to Muembe, song brought to this country by Pete Seeger, actually, and we listened to Ladysmith Black Mambazo, blew that with Taj Mahal from the album Long Walk to Freedom. Before Ladysmith Black Mambazo, opening up that set was Fairport Convention from their 1998 release, Who Knows Where the Time Goes, John Gaudy. This is Folk and Acoustic Music. My name is Michael Stock. And here's some announcements of folk happenings in South Florida. We had earlier in the studio ADV, that would be the American Darling Valve. They'll be at Lunastar Cafe this Wednesday evening. Thursday evening is the monthly bluegrass session presented by the South Florida Bluegrass Association at Lunastar Cafe. Friday night, Wagner, Hand and Flug. Saturday night will be an open mic hosted by Wagner, Hand and Flug. This is at Lunastar, 775 Northeast 125th Street in North Miami. Ellis Paul is coming to South Florida for a family show Friday morning at 10 o'clock at the Broward Center Performing Arts, and he'll do a concert that evening as well at 7:30, Ellis Paul. He'll also be playing at the Kravitz Center on Monday. Rhythm Foundation is presenting the Haitian voodoo rock band Ram, and they'll be playing at the North Beach Band Shell Saturday evening, October 25th. That's on 72nd Street and Collins Avenue. Swamp Fest Bluegrass Festival is November 9th at Flamingo Gardens, featuring a whole lot of bands, Uproot Hootenanny, the Florida State Bluegrass Band, Alligator Alley, with special guest Rodney Dillard, Saturday, November 9th at the Flamingo Gardens in Broward County. The 4th Annual Earth Music Day is presented at Jonathan Dickens State Park at Hobie Sound. It'll be Saturday, November 9th. It'll also be in memory of Boomslang Swamp Singer. That's at Jonathan Dickinson State Park in Hope Sound, Saturday, November 9th. Matthew Sabatelle is presenting a series on folk music and history, October 24th, Songs of Western Expansion. Matthew Sabatelle will be presenting it courtesy of the Folk Music Club at Hollywood at the Sterling Road Branch Library in Fort Lauderdale, 3151 Sterling Road. That's Thursday evening at 6:30. Mark your calendar, February 8th and 9th of next year, the South Florida Folk Festival, presented by the Broward Folk Club. It'll be in the new venue, the Bergeron Rodeo Grounds in Davie. And the Broward Folk Club also presents a monthly concert series at Gigi's Music Cafe. Starts with an open mic, and then Patchouli is the presented featured band. Patchouli, November 1st at Gigi's Music Cafe, 4385 Northwest 88th Street, it looks like, or Avenue in Sunrise. Well, let's get back to some more music. This is a duo. One is from England, the other from Ireland, Liat Liss and Kyla McLaughlin. They call themselves the Gossamer Strings, and this is their second album, Due to Darkness, and here is the title cut.
Over the rocks we are headed, beneath the grasses we'll take our rest, due to the darkness. No further shall we go. No need to keep to the path, just keep your eyes peeled for shelter. The light here, it fades fast, and all that's left is darkness.
Seven kids, I know their names by heart. Your mother's father worked the mines, Petersburg and Charleston, St. Petersburg and Charleston. good old days.
Good old days.
Good old days.
Good old days.
On the porch, tea's cold and bound. Empty bottle, rock of wine, cotton work of mines. Oh, cotton work of mines. In the good old days,
good old days.
The good old days. $0.50 a bloody day. No child labor laws. Most them little babies die disease and alcohol. Say disease and alcohol. In the good old days.
Good old days.
To tell the thousand lies, come and kiss my ass. Barefoot on the cabin floor, paint the broken glass. Paint the broken glass. Good old days.
Good old days.
Good old days. This ghost in West Virginia, feel them in my bones. Memories of the hard times in your eye never grow old. Your eye never grow old, Lord. In the good old days,
in
the good old days, in the good old days, the damn good old days. In the good old days,
in
the good old days.
I just wanna be free.
I Don't Want to Get Married, Alison DeGroot and Tatiana Hargreaves from their new CD, from self-titled CD. Malcolm Holcomb before that with Good Old Days from his CD, Pretty Little Troubles, and opening up that set brand new from the Gossamer Strings, Due to Darkness, from the CD Due to Darkness. And that does it for this edition of Folk and Acoustic Music. Thanks to my guest, American Darling Valve. They'll be at Lunastar Cafe on Wednesday, and Ellis Paul, who will be at the Broward Center on Friday and the Kravitz Center next Monday. Thanks to you for tuning in. Thanks to you also if you pledged money during our pledge drive last week. This is Folk and Acoustic Music on 91.3 WLRN and HD1 Miami-Fort Lauderdale, 91.5 WKWM and HD1 Marathon Key West, 90.7 WFM LV HD4 West Palm Beach and 101.9 NPR for the Palm Beaches.
Hurricanes, lightning, flooding, and tornadoes affect the entire state of Florida, and the team of meteorologists from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network keep you informed around the clock. All year long, we are committed to providing in-depth weather coverage, both over the radio and on the mobile app Florida Storms. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by this station and Citizens Property Insurance, online at citizensfla.com.